Thank you, Minister. And I'm joined here today with Minister Michael McGrath, 33rd Minister for Finance in the state and a representative of Cork South Central. So thank you, Michael, for taking time out of your busy schedule to be here with
us today.
Thank
you, Michael. Delighted to be here.
A Corkman, we're here with the Dublin Credit Unions. As a Corkman, how do you find working now daily in Dublin as Minister for Finance? You're up and down, I presume, every day.
Well, I've been a TD since 2007, so I have been spending a few days of my week in Dublin for quite a long time. And the week is a little longer now in Dublin as a minister, in that I come up on typically on a Monday and get home on a Thursday evening in a good week. Some weeks I'd have to be here for longer. I might need to make a trip to weekend, but I'm well used to it now at this stage.
Yeah, and
it's a great honour to serve as Minister for Finance.
Very good. With the Credit Union Amendment Bill going through the various stages in the Dáil at the moment, and I'd like to cover a little bit more on that later. And again, our local TD, Jennifer Carroll McNeill, is the Junior Minister, or the Minister for State with Responsibility for Credit Union. So it's great to have someone, a local TD, with such energy and passion pushing that through your department. So it's great. But before we get into that, I'd like to cover a few other topical issues at the moment. So corporation tax is one that we're hearing about at the moment. And we've had a couple of years of really good bonanza corporation tax takes, but it's been declining in the last couple of months. Is there any cause for concern for the economy, or where do you see the way forward?
Well, the receipts in the last few months highlight the risk that we have been raising. We have said for quite some time that corporation tax receipts are volatile in their nature, that a large share of what we have been collecting is potentially windfall and might not repeat into the future. And we've seen some signs of that in recent months. The alarm bells aren't ringing. We're still collecting a very, very substantial amount of corporation tax receipts. This month, November, is a key month in terms of the returns that we collect as an exchequer. And the weakness in the last few months has been attributed really to just a weakness in the external environment, which we have seen in our GDP numbers and in the exports of certain sectors and even certain specific companies, is what has had a direct impact on exports, on GDP, and on corporation tax receipts. But that's why we have prepared for this scenario. That's why we're running budget surpluses. We set up a national reserve. We are reducing the national debt. And now we're proposing to set up two new funds into the future. Yeah. So this is not unexpected. But it's not necessarily the start of a trend. November is a key month. We'll see what happens in the next few weeks.
And the other tax heads are very good and very strong.
They're still quite strong. VAT and income tax are doing very well, and they are a good measure of the domestic economy, reflecting high employment levels and very good consumption levels across the economy as well. So the economy is strong and resilient, but growth this year and next year will be at a much lower level than we've been used to. So last year, the economy grew by almost 10%, whether you measure it by GDP, which we tend not to do, or modified domestic demand, it was nearly 10%. This year, it's more like 2%, so much softer, but it's still in the positive territory,
so
which is a good thing.
We still have a very strong underlying economy.
We do, which
and
is,
not,
which is very good.
It's not the same risks as 10 years ago, or 2008, 2012.
No, it's much more diversified now. Yeah,
very
and good. And certainly better regulated.
So thank you, Minister. So we'll jump on to housing, and we're in the midst of a housing crisis and at the moment, and there's a lot of talk about it. And I suppose your colleague, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin, was recently defending the government's record, saying that 33,000 houses have been delivered in the last, I think it was 2 to 3 years. The government's own targets is 33,000 houses per annum. Other commentators are saying we need to provide 50,000 houses per annum. So how do you think we'll get to those figures of the 50,000 per annum, or 35,000, 40,000 per annum? What do we need to do as a country? Because obviously we need to bring in more workers to do it, because even the workforce maybe is a bit short at the moment as well.
Yeah, we will achieve the target this year. The target is 29,000 under Housing for All. So we believe we will exceed 30,000 units. We do accept that we need to go further, and we are reviewing the National Planning Framework, and that will result in a change to the targets in terms of housing output for the next number of years. There are different elements that need to be addressed. The planning system has to be reformed. So there's a new planning bill Minister O'Brien is bringing into the Oireachtas. That will help to provide certainty around timelines and so on. When it comes to labour, I think we will see a reallocation of labour from the construction of commercial real estate, offices, for example, into the residential sector. So while labour is tight, I don't think it is the biggest constraint that we face at this point in time. So we just have to continue to invest as a government. We're putting about €5 billion in next year in capital through the Land Development Agency, the Exchequer, the Housing Finance Agency. But then we need about another €10 billion of private capital to help build 30-odd thousand units. So we will revise the targets, but that in and of itself doesn't mean you build more homes. Yeah. Building homes means, you know, funding, planning, labour, dealing with all of the materials inflation challenges. You need land that's serviced and zoned. So all of those ingredients have to be dealt with.
So I suppose you actually mentioned about private capital of €10 billion being needed, and maybe that's somewhere credit unions need to step up to the plate and do a bit more. And I know for a long number of years we were looking for a vehicle to be allowed to invest in social housing. That was brought given to us in 2017, and we've set up a credit union approved housing body fund now as well. And for full disclosure, I was part of getting that set up and getting that running as well. I think so far there's only €33 million gone into it. What would you like to see credit unions doing, and that, like, there is significant more capacity that credit unions can put into it? Where, what would your expectations for credit unions to do to deliver some of that €10 billion that's needed?
Well, you do have access to a lot of capital, and so you know, we have to bring in capital from a wide range of sources, institutional capital, non-bank lenders, credit unions certainly can play a role. I was recently invited to the launch of a small development in Galway, which I understand the credit union movement has been directly involved in. So we are beginning to see movement, but I do agree that there is potential to do more, and we have to continue to work on it.
Yeah, very good. The Budget 24 then, and so you're an accountant and I'm an accountant, so budget time is always an interesting time in our lives anyhow, even obviously even more so for yourself now. I suppose 5 weeks on from Budget Day and the bill is going through the different stages of houses. Mm. How do you feel about the budget? Do you think it hit the right note? Do you think it's managed to sort of close the gaps where it needs to close the gap? Because obviously we have some people with economy that's booming on one side, but we have a lot of people on the other side who are struggling as well. So do you think that it hit the note that it needed to hit?
And we did have to strike the right balance between providing support to people at a time when the cost of living remains high, and I know you're seeing that in your day-to-day work, while at the same time not adding unduly to inflation that we are trying to get down, and inflation thankfully is falling. So it was a large budget package. We had about €2.7 billion targeted at exceptional one-off measures, and those will begin to flow now in the coming days through the Department of Social Protection. So I do think we got the balance right overall, but it is also a prudent budget because we're still forecasting a surplus next year of over €8 billion, so about 3% of national income. That's a very, very strong position to be in, and allows us to do our best to meet the needs of today while also providing for costs and challenges that are coming at us really quickly.
Yeah, very good. I suppose actually just when you talk about the surplus there as well, a significant amount of government debt is going to be coming up for renewal in the next 5 to 6 years. And do you think credit unions could actually play a part in, you know, like state savings bonds? And I know it's exclusively on post at the moment, but do you think credit unions could become part of that as well to ensure that some of the savings we have could actually go towards refinancing some of that government debt, do you think?
Well, I think there will be opportunities in the future. We have a national debt profile where the NTMA has managed it really well in recent years. They have refinanced as much as they could during the very low interest rate environment. The gross debt stands at around €220 billion. The net debt is considerably less. We have the Strategic Investment Fund as well. So they will go to the markets at the appropriate time. They want to have a steady stream of borrowing every year so that they maintain the relationships in the market with the institutional investors. So if the credit unions can find a way of participating and being involved in that process, I think there will be opportunity.
Very good. The House Help to Buy scheme, you're on record there recently of saying that it won't be extended to second house homes. And I suppose in principle, I would agree, because I think support's done the wrong way, it can actually drive up the price of things and can be counterproductive. And I think there's probably a lot of supports in the housing market at the moment that are maybe not having the best effect possible. But we're in a very difficult housing market. So The one of the things I suppose I'd say on the second-hand homes, a lot of people say in urban areas houses are being built, but in a lot of rural areas there's a severe lack of housing being built. So for people who are now being priced out of second-hand homes in rural areas because home to work, people are working from home, or people are now relocated out, driving the house prices up. There's a lot of people in rural areas who are now being priced out of their own rural areas, where years ago people were priced out of Dublin and had to move to rural areas, but now you have people in rural areas being priced out. What can be done for people who are caught in that predicament? Because it's a significant cohort of people.
It is, and the lack of private supply in large parts of the country is a concern, and that is what we are seeking to address. And that means, for example, addressing the viability challenges that many developers face. So that's why earlier this year we suspended development contribution charges, water connection fees, you know, taking 12 to 14,000 euro off the cost of building a new home. We have given Ishka Éireann a multi-annual commitment in terms of capital funding to make sure that they can service zoned land, so that that's available. And the state is also directly lending to the development sector through Home Building Finance Ireland. So we are doing a lot to try and make sure that we have private supply in areas of the country where it's not where it needs to be. But I think you do make a fair point. For some people, they don't have the opportunity of buying a new home because of the lack of development in their area, and that is an issue that we are very anxious to address.
Yeah, and just you mentioned about the multi-annual budget there as well. Is that something that the department have considered from a developer's point of view as well, to encourage the building of houses? Because one of the things that we said is, you know, cost of bank finance, as you say, it's the economics actually on building houses doesn't really stack at the moment in certain parts of the country. So you've done good measures to try and address that. But if developers and banks had more certainty over a multi-annual budget that there would be funding there, would that help kickstart that part of the market? And if I look at America as an example, and even say COVID-19, where all the funding was put in up front, the pharmaceuticals were given guarantees that we'll buy the product from you, and therefore they were able to build it because they had the guarantees. That's something that we could do to try and address the supply of housing.
Yeah, well, I think we are doing that in the housing area now through the National Development Plan and the Housing for All strategy. We have given a multi-annual commitment of major capital that the state is going to continue to provide. We're working through the Land Development Agency draft business plan at the moment, which is looking a number of years ahead to see what contribution they can make to increasing the supply of homes across the country. So when it comes to capital, we are operating and governing on the basis of a multi-annual plan, because you're right, the nature of projects is that they take quite some time to get through the system and deliver, and so a one-year commitment is just not enough.
Yeah, very good. The credit union bill, we'll jump into the credit union bill, and as well, it's with your colleague, Jennifer Carroll-McNeill, is the Minister for State with Responsibility for it. There's a lot of good things in the bill, and I think, you know, if we look at the 2012 bill, there was a lot of stuff that brought in additional cost and regulation and burden, and good things as well, because it brought in risk management and internal audit, so it did a lot of good for the sector as well.
Yeah.
This bill actually is looking at freeing up the sector to do more. So rather than getting into the detail of what is in the bill, where would you like to see credit unions in 5 years, Simon? What would your expectation, because we might have an expectation, but what's your expectation of what we should be doing in 5 years' time? Because you're going to give us these tools. What do you want us to do with these tools? And what would you consider a success in 5 years' time?
Well, first of all, I do want to acknowledge Minister Jennifer Carroll-McNeill, and I know she's put an enormous amount of work into this bill and also in engaging with the sector. And to be fair, that follows on from the work of Sean Fleming.
Yeah, who did.
When
he
was the minister,
a huge amount of work as
he
well,
did.
Yeah.
And it is probably one of the bills in Ireland that has had the most engagement with stakeholders. And I think that's the way it should be, because we do have to bring the movement with us as we try to chart the way forward. And I think you hit the nail on the head. The bill is essentially about giving the movement the tools that it needs to move forward into the future. And I think there are incredible opportunities open now to the credit union movement. And we have seen banks close many branches all over Ireland in communities where credit unions are in existence, and in many respects are offering the only opportunity to go in and meet with a member of staff and engage face to face in terms of services. And that said, you are combining that then with your own investment in digitalisation, which I've seen here in your own credit union today, and in the nature of the products and the services that you're offering here, which are, you know, of the highest quality. So I think that is the future. I think you know what needs to be done, and we will now work with you through this enabling framework, which is what the legislation seeks to provide and help you to reach the potential that is undoubtedly there.
Yeah, very good. As well, you mentioned there as well, and to coincide with it too, is the retail banking review as well that's going on. And I suppose for the first time when I read the retail banking review, it was the first time where I saw actually credit unions being called out as systemically important to the country. And you know, and many times before, credit unions were, you could argue, they were a bit of an afterthought. There's a couple of good things in it. Your ATMs and access to cash is going to be mandated, I think, or it's going to become more important that we do keep the access to cash.
Yeah.
You know, what supports will be there for credit unions and for other institutions? Obviously, everyone needs to be treated the same to make sure there is access to cash. Because, again, I'm fully digital and have been for many years, but there's a lot of people who are not necessarily comfortable in that, and there's a lot of people who want to have the different options. So, you know, what can we do to make sure, give the assurance that there will always be cash for people in the community?
Access to cash is very important, and you know, not having it really does risk financial exclusion. And so we are developing legislation to provide for access to cash, and then allied to that, we're bringing forward a new national payment strategy. So on the one hand, it's about where can you access cash and where can you lodge cash, and on the other hand then it is, well, how can you spend money? And do you have the option, or should you have the option in certain circumstances to use cash? So we do have some significant policy decisions we have to make over the months ahead in relation to both of those issues. What is an appropriate level of access in terms of getting cash across our country and in different communities? So we have decisions to make there, and also then people who want to have the right to use their cash, in what circumstances should they have the right to use it? They don't in every circumstance at the moment, but there are some essential products and services where I think it is justified that people would have the ability and the right to use cash. Yeah. So we're working through all of that at the moment, and next year will be a key year in terms of a new national payment strategy and access to cash legislation for the first time in the history of the state, and we're actively working on that now.
Yeah, very good. There's another aspect of it as well that called out for the CCR and the cost of doing inquiries with the CCR. Now the CCR is under the remit of the Central Bank. Yeah. So for credit unions, we do a high volume of low value loans. It's very expensive to do that. Is that something that's on the table, or are you aware of that level of detail in it? You're probably
it's not with me personally, so I'm not aware of the detail of that, but more than happy to make an inquiry. But I would imagine it is a regulatory matter in it.
Yeah, but I do think it's an important, and we need to be giving loans to people. Like,
what is the cost, can I ask, of the central bank seeking
I think it's €3.50 per transaction, per inquiry. It's expensive enough, and like we did it, like loans over €500.
Yeah.
Like our lowest loan in the last 12 months was €40. You know, so we're covering a massive range, and it's very important to make sure we keep access to loans affordable for people as well.
Okay.
So I think just on affordability point of view, I think it'd be the digital euro. Actually, you mentioned cash and access to cash. I suppose, where are we with the digital euro, and has Ireland a policy on the digital euro? I know it's a European Central Bank thing. Again, you saw the technology we have here. We definitely embrace technology, but are there risks of going the full digital euro, or where do we stand on
that? It's a project that is under development by the European Central Bank, and I have been present at and involved in a number of discussions, in particular at the Eurogroup, where this issue is on the agenda, and the President of the ECB, Christine Lagarde, has presented on it and given us a number of updates. I do believe it's important that we have a very clear communication strategy and plan around it to explain what it is and what it is not, because there will be people who view it with a high degree of suspicion that it's another way of getting rid of cash, which it's not. So I think it is a project that the ECB and all of the stakeholders need to work together on. I think move slowly and appropriately, but bring people with us and explain exactly what it's all about.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it runs the risk of, you know, conspiracy theorists and people who just view it suspiciously and make it out to be something it's not. So we have been advocates, certainly at Eurogroup level, for very clear communications and direct engagement with the citizens about what this project is about.
Yeah, because like one of the concerns I'd have around it, and like I think the efficiency of a digital euro could be huge. So,
yeah.
And as long as we can see those savings, it'd be brilliant. On one hand, the ECB are talking about financial institutions will be still the financial intermediaries, that they won't have a relationship with the consumer. So therefore, how do you get the efficiencies? But the other side of it is, if they have the relationship with the consumer, does that mean it's end of high street banking as we know it? And where are people going to get access to credit? And I don't see how that's going to work out of it. And I don't see where we're going to get efficiency because of holding on to legacy things. And that's an area of concern I definitely have.
Yeah, and it's a project that's not yet finalised. Yeah. And a lot of those design issues remain under consideration.
Yeah, very good. There's a lot of talk recently about lack of competition in the Irish banking sector. And I suppose from a credit union perspective, we'd obviously look at that we are the real competition, and rather than being a pillar of the banking system, we would look ourselves that we should be the main pillar of the banking system, that, you know, there's no reason why we shouldn't have larger market share than banks. At the end of the day, what we do is not for profit, so therefore we should be able to give better returns on savings, lower rates of interest, so it should be very hard for banks to compete with us. But there's clear lack of competition out there at the moment, and I'd argue that credit unions can't do as much as they can do. Where do you see credit unions playing their part in that competitive landscape for ordinary people going forward?
I think that credit unions have a huge part to play. I think the community ethos, the not-for-profit ethos, the amount of volunteerism that is still involved and still so integral to the running of credit unions is important. I think the public trust, and when you look at successive surveys that have shown the credit union movement as being among the top, if not in some surveys, the top in terms of trustworthiness, just shows that the public value and appreciate the role of credit unions and want to support credit unions. So the challenge then for credit unions is to make sure that you are offering products and services that are relevant, and that you are investing in technology and digitalisation, and that you try and drive innovation and drive reform. And I think you are doing that from what I can see in the engagement I've had around the country. I see more and more credit unions who are moving up the value chain in that respect and are engaging directly with their members. And I think that is the future. So I do see a bright future for credit unions, but it's in your own hands and you have to drive this yourself. You'll have the full support of government and my own department and Minister Carol McNeill and myself in what you're seeking to do. But the movement itself has to drive this into the future.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And if you look at what we've seen in the last couple of years, we've seen huge levels of increase in activity with members, especially with the current accounts and that. But we're still struggling in certain areas. Like last year, 92% of credit unions last year had put share caps in place, which actually stopped people from saving with the credit union, and that was related to capital and the capital requirements. And I know that that's outside, it's not the Department of Finance, it's a regulatory issue,
yes,
but it does hurt competition, and it does, you know, as a public representative, it is impacting people. Like we send money back to people, which is an awful situation to be in. Like, so, you know, for some people would argue that we're lighter touch regulation than banks, I'd actually argue they're quite the opposite. Our hands are tied in so many regards. Liquidity is another major issue. The capital requirements and liquidity requirements are two serious issues at the moment, which are preventing us from actually looking after our members better than we are.
Yeah, and that's why I think the enhanced engagement protocol that is provided for within the legislation between the movement and the central bank as your regulator is important, because your voice needs to be heard while respecting the role of the regulator as distinct from the role of the department in terms of policy making. It is important we have an independent regulator to protect the overall health of our financial system, to make sure that all of your members' money is fully protected and safeguarded, which I know is what you do and will always want to do anyway. But you're absolutely entitled to raise legitimate questions and legitimate concerns in relation to your perspective on regulation and the nature of regulation. And that's why that protocol and that engagement between the movement and the central bank will be an important part of the relationship going forward, because your voice has to be heard.
Yeah, very good. And recently you called yourself on banks to pass on better, more deposit interest to customers and savings, and something that we'd like to be doing here ourselves as well. And we're probably not passing on what I'd like to be passing on, but again, we don't necessarily have access to the same overnight facilities that the banks have, which actually, again, so what we do is we collect the money, we give it to the banks, Irish banks and European banks, they hold on to it overnight. They have access to overnight facilities on better returns, so we don't have the opportunity to give that back. I know there's there's technical details around it, but is that something that an area that the Department of Finance would be willing to look at to see, is there, can we square that circle that credit unions could actually get access to your system overnight funds, and then we can give the money back to the members, and then that will force the banks to actually give money back as well, and the, yeah. the consumer.
So it's not an issue that we're directly involved in or would have a role in, and it may well be the case that having such access would come with other terms and conditions in terms of the nature of the relationship, the nature of the licensing system, and the nature of the regulation. So that's something that I think that the movement would need to explore directly with the European Central Bank.
Before we finish up, Minister, I suppose you were an opposition spokesperson for a number of years. What does it feel like now being the Minister for Finance, having been on the opposing side for a while? Is the role different from what you expected, or is it exactly what you expected?
It's very intense, but I really enjoy it. I did have a long apprenticeship in opposition, but I also had the privilege of serving as Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform for 2.5 years in what was a very, very challenging time for the country, where we had to grapple with COVID, and we had a number of budgets and exceptional fiscal interventions to try and help households and help businesses. And now I'm seeing it from the other side, from the Department of Finance. So it's a great, great honour. And, you know, I'm loving the role. I love the variety. I love getting out and about and meeting people and listening to just people's lived experience, because I think that's what makes us better politicians, and that's what provides better policies when we engage directly with citizens. So really enjoying the role, and, you know, thankfully our country is overall, notwithstanding the challenges, we're in a pretty good place. Ireland is looked at as a very successful country. Our economy is in good health. Public finances are being well run. I sit around the table in Europe every month, and we are the envy of our colleagues that we're running budget surpluses. We have a falling national debt. We're setting up reserve funds to provide for the future, and we have full employment. So, you know, we face challenges. We absolutely acknowledge that, and there are areas where we have to do more and we have to do better. But overall, I think we're in a pretty good place, and we have a good foundation on which to build. And I think the credit union movement is going to play an increasingly important part in the financial services landscape in Ireland into the future. And I just want to assure you and all your constituent credit unions as part of the Dublin Group of Credit Unions, my full support in everything that you're seeking to do.
Thank you, Minister. I suppose I did a search on Oireachtas.ie in researching for here, and there was 222 hits against your name, both in opposition and asking questions in the Dáil and responding to questions now more recently. So over the last 10 years, 222 hits. So you've been a very strong advocate of credit unions in all your time as an elected representative. And so I'd like to say thanks for that, because I always know that you were there, and especially in opposition, you were asking questions when they need to be asked. So that was very, very good. I'm sure there's probably more interactions to 222, but that was one stat I just got yesterday.
Well, that was on credit union issues.
That was specifically credit union issues in the Iraq. Yeah. So 222 times in the last 10 years, which is quite a lot of questions.
Huge amount of work while in opposition, engaging directly with the sector, and really trying to advance the agenda of reform and making the changes necessary to enable the movement to modernise and progress in the way it wanted to. And, you know, while direct line responsibility now falls to Minister of State Carol McNeill, she knows I'm there if any help is needed at any time to provide political support for advancing any of the policy objectives. And I'm more than happy to continue to support her work and be there in whatever way I possibly can to push on the agenda that we're all trying to advance.
Yeah, so look, on behalf of the Dublin credit unions, I'd like to say big thanks for all the work you did in the past, because it was well respected throughout the movement. And thanks for coming here today as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.